Like to bring this meeting of House Fisheries to order. It is 8:55 on Wednesday, March 14th. And President or Representative Johnson, Representative Ledoux, Representative Wilson, Representative Edgen, myself, Chair Seaton. And this time I want to remind everybody about their cell phones. And today we will hear House Bill 15, Border Fish, Conflict of Interest. Is there anything else before we take up this bill to come before the committee? Yes, Madam Chair.
Well, I would just like to bring the committee substitute for House Bill number 15, version 25-LSO114.
Pass you the gavel here. The Vice Chair isn't with us at this time. And so we will, since it's my bill, I guess I'll come off here and give you the gavel.
Chair Wilson, I'm just having a little technical difficulty to hear that.
Okay, brevities. Come back to order, and Representative Seaton, we'll let you go ahead and explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 15 seeks to allow better participation and voting by those people on the Board of Fisheries that are very knowledgeable about their subjects. What has happened in the past is that people are conflicted out that know the most about their fisheries, whether those are charter vessel owners or sport fishing or commercial fishermen that have, that they or any member of their family has any financial conflict within the subject before the board. This bill says that if you have a participatory interest, in other words, you're participating because you have a commercial fisheries entry permit license or a crew member license, or if you're participating because you have a sport guiding license, then you'll declare that that conflict, but you can go ahead and participate in the deliberations and the vote. However, if you have a financial conflict based on you are being hired there, you're hired to represent somebody, such as a lobbyist, such as a consultant, such as an executive director, that is on the board to do something for somebody, that financial conflict would not, you would not be exempt from that, and you wouldn't be able to deliberate and vote if you had that kind of conflict. The difference between the original bill that you had before you, that was version A and version C, is that version A inadvertently took the people out of the declaration part of the bill. And so under this current version that we're looking at, everyone would still have to make all their declarations of conflicts, just like they do under currently. And then the exemption would be simply for those people that had those participatory conflicts. One other thing that was added in between A and C was a requirement that there was a report. And Madam Chair, we might want to look at that and see whether whether we want to do that or not, because going from the sunset to the sunset in the report might give us a fiscal note, and so we might want to just delete the report, because they'll have the report anyway. We were just specifying the requirements of that report, but that can be specified by the committee at the time of sunset review anyway. And so, Madam Chair, basically that's what the bill is to accomplish, to get the most qualified people being able to take actions at the board, have people that are in both industries willing to participate on the board, knowing that they're not going to be conflicted out from participation on issues of prime concern.
Okay, any questions from the committee? Representative Ledoux.
Representative Seaton, I'm just hypothetically, I'm just trying to get my arms wrapped around the distinction as to why it's okay for somebody to vote on something if they stand to make hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars because they have their own interest financially, as opposed to somebody who's making 75 or 100 grand as the executive director of a fisheries organization, and this would be probably deemed as a hired consultant or a lobbyist. I mean, what's the distinction there? Why are you making it okay for one and not for the other?
Thank you, Representative Luth, through the chair. The distinction is that there is inherent moral conflict if you are taking action that could reward you. There is no conflict, moral conflict at all, between somebody that's a lobbyist or a consultant that's paid to be there to represent and to get something for an association or for somebody that's hired them. So they're doing their job either way, and there's no moral conflict for them at all. There is a moral conflict for someone who's a fisherman, who's a charter boat industry person, who is up there and is voting on something that could affect their income. And it's kind of like the ethics questions. At some point, you allow the ethical integrity of the people to stand in due stead because they would be getting something for themselves, but a consultant or a lobbyist is not there to get anything for themselves. They're there to get something for, they've been hired to be there on issues by other members, and so their job is both, and so there's no moral conflict between that action at all for them, whereas a participatory interest in those people that are being conflicted out do have that ethical conflict that this bill allows them to substitute for the strict alienation from being able to participate if you or your family member has a participatory interest.
But it almost sounds kind of like what you're saying is that when the lobbyist votes for something that maybe he doesn't think is personally all that great, but knows it's going to be good for his client, he doesn't feel guilty about it. But if you're voting for it because you're going to make a huge amount of money on it, you may still vote for it anyway, but you'll feel guilty about it?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux.
And I'm not being facetious trying to conceptualize this.
And it is a very interesting situation in which you have somebody that is paid to be there, is paid to be there to do something, and they do their job. There's no conflict at all if they do their job. They shouldn't feel guilty about that. They're there to do a job, and the job is to represent their clientele and to do whatever they can. Now, if there's a fisherman there or a charter vessel industry person there that is going to be voting on something that would influence how the industry runs and whether he would be making money off that or a member of his family, there is an inherent conflict, a moral conflict there. There is not a moral conflict if the person is doing their job and succeeds at that and participates in votes. So that's the rationale of the bill. And if, you know, some people see it and some people may not like it.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
I guess I haven't seen, you know, from the looking in at the North Pacific Management Council, for instance, that we get any better public decisions out of the people who are voting one way because their own financial interests are going to be benefited, as opposed to those who are voting the same way because their clients' financial interests stand to benefit. So I guess that's not really a question, it's a statement. So
okay. Any other comments? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to hear from someone from the Board of Fisheries? Is there someone to testify on
yes.
that? I guess the question I have, it's in your sponsor statement that only 10% of the time people have been had to recuse themselves. Is that a significant amount? I mean, that's not very much.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, well, 10% of the votes that are taken on the issues and recusing the people that are most knowledgeable about those issues, sometimes very controversial issues, is a very significant amount of time, I think, and the board thinks so too. They have 7 people on the board, and you have testimony from Art Nelson in your packet there, who is chairman of the board, and testified in favor of a bill. It was 241 was around here before, and in the second paragraph down there, what's also problematic is the potential for losing a board member due to a conflict of interest. We have a 7-member board, and regardless of how many board members are present participating, so whether there are absences and or conflicts, we always have to at least 4 votes to carry any motion. And so especially if it's compounded with the absence of another member of board, a lot of times it becomes very difficult for us to take regulatory action. And so at least Mr. Nelson, as chair of the board, and we also had testimony, I believe, in here from another previous board member that, you know, they did find significant problems with being able to go forward, especially if it involves a fishery that would have more than one board member, having family members involved, or that where you would have multiple members conflicted.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Edmund.
And just to add to the explanation by the bill sponsor, Representative Johnson, at the Board of Fish meeting in Dillingham, the Bristol Bay Fisherman, the board member, Mr. Haniano, had to recuse himself several times, and it was quite noticeable watching him leave the table and then have to go sit in the audience because of a perceived conflict of interest, whether it was himself as a gill netter or a family member who might have been a upset netter. So any issue that was perceived as a conflict of interest meant that he had to leave the table and go out in the audience, and this happened quite a few times during a several-day span. So it was more than the 10%, if I remember correctly.
And I'd like to make a comment, too. You know, in our body, when we're having deliberations on the floor, and if it's a medical thing, there's not very many people that have medical information. And so if you know, and I'm just using that as an example, if you take out the person that has or people that have the expertise in those areas to answer the questions, then what do you have left to really clarify things? And so, and that's what happens sometimes, is that the experts are said, oh, well, you can't take part in the discussion, when they might have very, very important comments to make that will clarify or at least make points that wouldn't be brought out otherwise. So I think it's very important that this comes forward and that we look at it like this. Representative Ledoux.
Well, it is quite a conundrum because, I mean, you're right. On one hand, sometimes it seems like you got a choice of a board made up of people who have no interest in it and thus no information on it, and so they know nothing about what they're voting on. Or you can have a board made up of people who have financial interest in things, and so they're voting their pocketbook. So which is worse, somebody who's voting their pocketbook or somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about?
Representative Seaton.
And Madam Chair, I'd just like to add one other thing, and that is the sunset date was chosen so that it would have a full board cycle, so that this would be evident through, you know, we have several different areas of the state. We have Western Alaska, Bristol Bay, and then we have South Central, and then we have Southeast, and we have statewide. So the sunset date would be one board cycle so that the this would see how the effect of it is through the regions of the state, and then it would be sunsetted and back to the legislature for consideration.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I perceive a problem with that. If part of the mission of this is to get more qualified people that are going to, you know, that can participate because they don't have to recuse themselves, and all of a sudden it sunsets, we go back to the old system, are we going to lose those members that decided to come on board because they, in fact, were going to be able to participate? So all of a sudden, 2011, we decide it's not a good idea. Then the board resigned because now they've got conflicts and can't participate.
Representative Seaton.
And Madam Chair, I think it's a balancing act. I think that this is a significant enough change that the legislature would be well to look at it. I think that it is going to work well, and the legislature will renew it. The legislature could always come in at any point in time and change it back anyway. This is just that the legislature would have to at least look at it in 2011 and see whether it's worked well and whether we should continue with this or whether it should revert back to the old system. And most of the members of the Board of Fisheries are, you know, very dedicated in there, and they've been operating under this system, although it's constrained. And I know that there are some people that haven't wanted to be on the board because of that constraint, but I think that they, if they were on the board, and even if we changed the regulations, I think they'd still serve out their term. Might be frustrated, but I think it's just worthwhile. It's a significant enough issue to bring to the attention of the legislature specifically for one more time anyway.
Representative Johnson, follow up.
And I don't know that this is a follow up. It's more of a statement. I have, as a member of the State Affairs Committee, we've spent hours and hours and hours and subcommittee after subcommittee, and it's now moving on with an ethics package that specifically is to build transparency into government and to build confidence in our constituencies that we're down here operating in an open environment. And I am personally reluctant to to kind of open up a different area and kind of go counter to the work that we've been doing on ethics. In my district, and I'm sure as everyone, that's one of the huge issues of the election was ethical behavior in the political process. And I am just reluctant to remove a layer of declaration or anything that has to do with that. And I just wanted to be on record as saying that I think that we're kind of running counter to the philosophy that I've espoused, and I think a lot of the members have espoused, of our desire to have, a transparency in our governmental system with boards, politicians, and all the way from top to bottom. And so I'm reluctant at this point to remove any of those safeguards that we have to ensure the public that we are, in fact, operating in a transparent system. And I guess that's more of a statement than a question or anything, but I just have some real, you're talking about morals and compromising where you feel the government should be, and I'm one of those that have always proposed a very open, straightforward transparency in government. And I think if this does anything to diminish that, then I'm not going to be terribly supportive. So I think I need to be more convinced that this is not going to have the opportunity for people to benefit themselves, and that's one of the things we've been very careful of. So I'm going to have to be convinced that this is, and I realize I'm just one vote, so but I think I need to be more convinced that this is not going counter to the direction that the entire legislature and the body and the whole government is moving towards.
Representative Seaton, talking about the transparency, would they still have to let everyone know where they're at and how they would be involved before they speak? Would you like to clarify? Or?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's why we introduced the version C instead of the version A. The version A had inadvertently taken the board out of one section, so it was unclear that they would have to do all the reporting, all the financial disclosures, all the declarations that they do now. The only difference is when the chairman decides whether someone is conflicted out, then the determination would be if you had the licenses under these three provisions on page one, and that was the conflict, then you would not be conflicted out. But if you had any other financial conflict, then you would be conflicted out, just like is currently the case. So, Madam Chair, one of the reasons, as sponsor of this bill, I didn't bring it forward earlier. I didn't want to get any confusion between what was the conversation we've all had with State Affairs on the ethics revisions and making sure that there is open and transparency, and the Board of Fish is under a microscope as far as the Open Meetings Act. And so it is very transparent process. The public participates all the time. The conflicts have to be, you know, not only filed but stated on the record, and then the chair would make that determination. So it is, there's no intention in this bill to make anything less transparent. It's only a question of whether those people that have those participatory conflicts based on these three licensing sections would be excluded from deliberations and voting.
Representative Seaton, could you give us some examples for each one of those statutes so that we would have an idea of what you're talking about?
Sure. And, Madam Chair, the statutes are in your packet, but the first statute, 1605, is sport fishing and crew members licenses. 1640-270 is sport-guided charter licenses. And 1643 is Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, that's limited entry permit licenses. So it's those three categories that wouldn't be required to be, to not participate in the deliberations and voting.
Okay, and we do have some people online. Representative Edgman, did you have another question?
This is a very minor question. I'm missing it, but I don't see in the statutes that the sponsor, bill sponsor, there's a section 3 which would repeal 3952-120F, and I don't know if that's legalese for something that I don't see, but I just don't see that provision in the, under section 39 that there's an existing F.
And we will, we have the Department of Law online, so we can ask them. That's okay.
Steve Daugherty, do you have an answer to that question?
Yes, that's the sunset provision. F is the new section that you're adding right now, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
So, Madam Chair, just for clarification, so what happens is when the sunset comes along, we would repeal the section, this exemption section, and so it would go back to current law. So we're adding Section F, and then in 2011, we would repeal Section F, and the current law would still be in effect.
So it's kind of a trial run to see exactly how it's working.
That's right. That's the sunset date, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Steve. Stand by, because we might need you again. We have some people from Dillingham. Robert Hayano from Dillingham. Robert, would you like to testify? State your name and your affiliation, please.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Robert Hayano, and I reside at 5622 Kanakanak Road here in Dillingham. I'm currently serving as a Board of Fish member, and I'm here today representing myself.
Go ahead, Robert. Appreciate you testifying.
Okay. Thank you. I'm in support of House Bill 15. I believe that changing the conflict of interest law would allow more participation from those members of the Board of Fish that are actively participating in the fishery and have extended family members that are active participants in the fisheries. I also believe that should this bill pass, we would see that we'll have more interest from the public to serve on the Board of Fishery from those members of the public that are active participants in the fishery. I also believe that should this bill pass, it would greatly enhance the concept of a lay board and provide the board with the personal experience and knowledge of those particular board members that have regarding a particular fishery issue. I also believe, and I've, from my experience on the board, that the existing conflict of interest law has a greater impact to those Board of Fish members that are longtime Alaskans and have extensive family history in the fishery, whether it be sport or commercial. You know, I can give you a couple of personal examples here at the last Board of Fish meeting regarding Bristol Bay, and I did a quick mathematical equation, and I was conflicted out of with approximately 30% of the Bristol Bay proposals. But you know, I'm one of 1,800 Bristol Bay drift permits, and I guess I personally had a hard time trying to find where any of the proposals would actually give me a financial benefit, being one of 1,800 drift permit holders. But and as the bill is drafted, I know there's some concerns about ethics and public process and whatnot, but I think by having the board members disclose potential conflicts would go a long ways to alleviate that. You know, and I think if there's still concerns, maybe there needs to be a provision added to the bill, or I'd offer this as a suggestion that at a particular issue, if there's Board of Fish members that think that, you know, the potential financial gain is too direct or something, that they can act on it by a majority of vote or something of that process. And there's a fairly extensive confirmation process for potential board members. And I think that, you know, if a name comes forward that the individual has a history of maybe not having the ethical standards that the state is looking for members to serve on the board, I think that's a good opportunity for the public to express those concerns at that particular time. So that's all I have, and thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Does any member have questions for Robert?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Edgman.
Robert, going back to the points brought forward by Representative Johnson regarding the ethical perception and the need to have transparency and so forth, I think those points are all certainly well taken by everybody here. But in terms of the greater good of the Board of Fisheries and the personal expertise that yourself or any other board member might bring from their fisheries or their areas or whatever specific background that they come from. But can you speak a little bit to, you know, how the board process is better when you have somebody who's knowledgeable about a certain area or a certain fishery?
Yes, Representative Edgman. You know, for myself, I found that and I just went through one regulatory cycle, and when we're in Cook Inlet, you know, that's a very complex fishery, and for me, it was helpful to have somebody like Ed Dersham there, who actually had some knowledge at least in the sport fishing charter part of it. The other thing I think that when we went to Southeast, you know, having somebody like Mr. Jensen there to help explain and the history and kind of the demand, individual management plans and whatnot. And, you know, although he was conflicted out of several issues down there, it seems to me that if the concept is to have a lay board and to bring those expertise to the board, by having the existing conflict of interest law, they seem to be in odds with each other, because I think what you're going to find is you're going to have people that aren't actively participating in those fisheries, whether it be sport or commercial, sitting on the board.
Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Robert, when the board is set up, I realize that they try to make it a well-rounded board and have someone from the charter industry, someone for the commercial fishing industry, et cetera. And it kind of seems amazing to me that they do that so that they have a little bit of everyone that will represent every part of the fishing industry. And yet at the same time, when it comes up to the debate, if that person knows or is involved a lot in the reason he was appointed to that position was because of where he's coming from and because of his knowledge, and then he's conflicted out. Do you have any comments on that directly?
No, and I would agree with you. To me, it's very frustrating because, you know, I thought that with my knowledge of the commercial fishery, and I also have some financial involvement in the sport fishery in the local area, that's part of the reason why I got put on the board. And then when it came to my area of expertise, I really couldn't participate in the deliberations. And it's not to say, and I agree with you that a well-rounded board is very helpful, but to me, it's extremely helpful as a board member for those areas of the state that I'm not very familiar with, is to have that expertise on the board to help guide the board's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go stay in Dillingham. Robin Samuelson, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Robin. Would you identify yourself for the record, who you're representing, and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, thank you. My name is Robin Samuelson. I'm representing myself. I reside in Dillingham, Alaska. I've sat on the Board of Fish. I've sat 9 years on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. There was not the excruciating conflict of interest statement that these board members have to read today when I was on the board back in 98 in 1990. But we've gone through different gyrations at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council to make the recusal as transparent as possible. I do remember a vote in Kodiak on crab when I was on the Board of Fish. It was probably my worst vote. That's why I remember the vote. The Department of Fish and Game is supposed to stay out of the allocation battles. And they're supposed to provide the board with biological information. The board representative in the crab fishery was from Kodiak and got recused out of the meeting. So I'm sitting there. I've never crab fished in my life. These are important life and decisions, big money involved at the time. So I had to go out to the public, and I picked a person I thought I could trust. Well, that person, unbeknown to me, gave me false information. I didn't find out till 6 months later. The board member that was recused gave me the correct information after I took the vote and told me how loused up I was in my thinking. But that stuck in my mind. If that board member was able to sit at the table and make the arguments for that region, you know, it's up to me to decide whether I take it or not. I don't think that House Bill 15 is diluting transparency, diluting fairness to all the user groups. You know, we brag that we have the best Board of Fish, we have the best managed fish stocks, and we need the best Board of Fish members making the decisions, and that's people that participate in the fishery, that are knowledgeable on the fishery. And what I've seen today, Mr. Chairman, is that the people that are knowledgeable sitting around the table are recused out and can't participate. I think we need to come up with a mechanism, and I'm all for the public participating, but the board member needs to disclose potential conflicts. The AG office would review them, make recommendations not only to the chairman but to the full Board of Fish, and put them recommendations back on the table for the public. So if Robin Samuelson makes a disclosure as a Board of Fish member, and I try to hide something, but Joe Blow is sitting back in the audience, and he knows that Robin Samuelson partakes in a gooey duck fishery, and there's only six of us, he could bring it to light through a written comment to the chairman of the board. And the board will take the issue up. But I think the full board needs to vote on the conflict of interest, the severity. A lot of our fisheries, like the Sitka fishery, 50 participants, it's a heck of a lot different than the 2,800 participants in the Bristol Bay fishery, 1,800 drift permits and 1,000. You're getting herring fisheries that are really small scale now, being cut way back. I think them demand the scrutiny of additional ethics disclosures and a vote by the board. So I don't look at a House Bill 15 as diluting the public process. I think it's in enhancing the public process. We're going to get the best information from the board members, and the board is going to be able to make a well-rounded decision. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Robin. And I had a question for you. You know, this bill does not mandate that everybody has to vote. What it does is it precludes somebody from being conflicted out because of a participatory interest. But from your experience on the board, if you had somebody on there that was in one of these fisheries that was very small and that a decision would be granting them a lot of fish or a lot of revenue, what's your experience? Do you think the person would go ahead and recuse themselves from voting anyway, just because it would be a significant conflict, or do we need to try to build something like that in there?
Mr. Chairman, once you become a board member, then you build trust up with six other members on that board. And the worst thing a board member could do is be a flaky, quote, flaky board member and try to lie to the other board members. That board member will be tainted so fast by the other board members, and quite frankly, ostracized by that board. Word will get out in public. There's no secrets in the fishing industry. And I think on the severity of the conflict, I think that an individual will. If that individual won't step forward, then there's somebody that would let the board members know that member has a conflict. I myself, if I was on the Board of Fish today, I've got one of my family members working on our tree, and between here and the Kuskokwim and the Yukon, I've got over 6,000 members hanging off that tree. I'd be conflicted out from here to the Yukon River under the present guidelines, even though I don't participate. But I do have family members that participate in that fishery. And I think it's just too restrictive at this point in time. We're not getting the best decisions we can out of the Board of Fish.
Thank you, Robin. Anyone else have any
Thank
questions?
You.
Let's go to Kenai, and we have Paul Shadura.
Good morning, Chairman Seaton, members of the House Fisheries Committee. My name is Paul Shadura, and I reside in the Kenai Peninsula. I'm the executive director of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. We come before you today in total support of House Bill 15, Board of Fisheries Participation Legislation to improve the public process of the board. We find it incredulous that it is acceptable to have active, affected physicians on physician boards, teachers on teachers boards, beauticians on beauticians boards, but we have limitations on active commercial fishermen on a fisheries board. AS 1605-221 references qualifications for Board of Fisheries members, knowledge and ability in the field of action of the board. Doesn't this by definition mean that the participants should have intimate knowledge of the business beforehand? We have a graying of the fleet. Is this board's members relegated to those who no longer have vested interest? Who do active, youthful commercial fishermen relate concerns to? how can vital revitalization concepts be given new insights? Many of you may be aware of the current issue of the firing of federal attorneys for political reasons. This is perfectly within authority to the administration, because these individuals serve at the pleasure of the president. In Alaska, the attorney general also serves at the pleasure of the governor's office and is subject to the same political prejudices. The attorney general's representative sits on the board of fish and reviews and recommends to the chair of the board an issue of conflict of interest. 20 years ago, you would see many exuberant commercial fishermen on the board and very little challenges to their participation. Under the last two administrations, there has been advice given by the board's counsel that has systematically rendered commercial fishing voices moot. A biased opinion of ethics construction that has rendered the board's current commercial fishing area expertise useless. There is a conflict of interest here. It is the interest of those that want to destabilize commercial fishing in the state, a slippery bias that may end in the collapse of our state's most sustainable industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Shadura? Seeing none, let's go to, Jerry McCune.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Jerry McCune. I represent United Fishermen of Alaska. We support this bill. There's been a lot said about this bill over the last 8 years, I'm sure. There is some interesting testimony. If you're a commercial fisherman in a particular fishery in the area, you're going to be conflicted out. No, there's just no question about it. If you're a lodge owner or a partner in the lodge, $2 million lodge, that might possibly get a direct conflict, you wouldn't be conflicted out, most likely. And I'll give you an example of one board meeting I was at. There was a processor up the river that processed sport caught, personal use fish, and sold those fish in a particular magazine. But that came out, that conflict came out, was declared, and he was not, there was no conflict of interest, so he got to take part. That's just the way it kind of works. And I think it's went too far on the commercial fishermen side and not far enough to on lodge, charter, and other interests that could have a direct benefit. But the way the statute reads, you don't really, you have to prove that direct benefit. That's the problem. And so with this small board, and Robin Samuelson's right, everybody knows everything about everybody. And some people do go out and research people's backgrounds to get conflict or to see if they can get them conflicted out so they're not voting on a particular issue. So there's no secrets there, but we do want to see full disclosure with the AG's office on paper and in the public. And we would like to move forward with some form of this bill so that the people that have expertise are put their name in. It has precluded a lot of expert people from putting their name in. I mean, they just, what's the benefit that you get sitting on there as if you hold two or three permits? You're going to be conflicted out. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. So that would be my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
Well, you know, listening to your testimony about how commercial fishermen are treated versus lodge owners, I certainly, you know, agree that that doesn't sound very fair. I guess I'm just wondering whether the solution might not be, instead of to loosen things up for the commercial fishermen, to tighten them up for the lodge owners and the sports fishing groups. I mean, that would seem to be kind of more in keeping with the way this legislature is going this year on ethics rules. I mean, it should be a level playing field. Absolutely no doubt in my mind there should be a level playing field, but can't you level it by tightening up things as far as the sports fishing groups are concerned?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know, because the statute, I've talked to attorneys and I went over the statute. You can talk, you can get your own opinion, but the direct conflict thing is, it applies really closely to somebody that has a permit or an interest in a particular fishery. Now, to prove a person up over here that has a $2 million lodge, getting a direct benefit from a decision is not easy to do. And but we did see that Ed Dersham did get conflicted out on some particular issues there. But the whole point, I think, that most of the people bring to the table that I've talked to is that they would like to see the full disclosure. And if there is a real problem, like Robin Sampson was talking about, the chairman could determine that person maybe deliberate but not vote. I mean, the chairman still has that option to do that. It used to be in the past the chairman would determine if there was a conflict or not before we had this statute. I think Gary Slavin, back when Gary Slavin was the chairman of the board, and he determined whether you would take part and vote. But the way the statute's written, I don't know if you could go the other way with it and tighten it up so those people would. I think what we're trying to do is loosen it up, and we're trying to get it so that everybody can take part, and then the chairman would determine under the disclosure that whether you had a vote or deliberate. At least maybe you might be able to deliberate and not vote on a particular issue. You don't know that, but until they determine that. But this way, they would be all out on the table, and everybody would have a chance to look at it and make that determination, I would think, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And it's part of the problem that if you have an area that is not only your own personal, but if you have somebody who has a charter license in that area and somebody that's got a commercial fishing license in that area, and I mean, the ramifications could be that you can never get a majority of the vote of the board if they have people involved in the fishery. So I mean, you might conflict enough, almost enough out of the board so you couldn't make decisions.
Mr. Chairman, that's happened one time before. They almost didn't have a quorum. There's people conflicted out. For example, in any fishery your parents, wife, brother, sister, children take part in, well, my son goes all the way up to up to the Bering Sea fishing, so that I guess that would be a conflict if I was going to talk about Bering Sea crab, even though I don't fish in that particular fishery, but my son does. So I would say that, you know, you could get a couple members. This happened before. A couple members got sick, one got conflicted out, you're down to four making decisions for very important fisheries, and we feel that all the members, if possible, should be part of the discussion, making these decisions for the state.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other questions for?
I had one.
Representative Johansson.
And you guys may have already gone over this, so if I'm going down a path you've already covered, please let me know. But Jerry, you said that all the Board of Fish members know there's no secrets. Everybody knows what everybody else is into, what permits, whatever. How do I know as a citizen? Do you do disclosures now? Can I easily access that information about from an outsider looking in? Because I don't know anything about anybody on the Board of Fish. How do I figure that out?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I think the chairman, correct me if I'm wrong, that you have to write down to the AG's office all your permits and whether you own a processor and everything else that's known about you on a piece of paper. And I think that you have to disclose before each meeting on if there's other conflicts that's came up to the AG's office, I think, on paper and in the public, if I'm not mistaken.
And Representative Johansson, we do have the AG online, so we can ask them that question. Are there any other questions for Jerry? Thank you, Ms. McKinn, for coming and testifying. And we have Brian. Let's see if we can get Brian Charles, and then we'll go to the AG. Brian, are you online? Or is it Byron? Byron Charles.
Yeah. Chairman Seaton, thank you for allowing me to be a part of this committee. It's an honor. First of all, the question I have, Chairman Seaton, is the legislature planning on seeing what can be done as far as a quantity versus quality issue? It seems to me that for the last 10, 20 years, it's been one of the state's concerns. People staying focused on quantity rather than as opposed to quality.
Byron, we're working today on House Bill 15, which is conflict of interest on the Board of Fisheries. Is that the subject you're talking on?
Well, yes, sir. It seems to me all this would apply to the same issues because you're dealing with fishery issues. But I've been paying close attention to everything that was being presented before the legislators for the past month now. But I never hear anything about being addressed as far as not only dealing with the fisheries issues, but it seems to me that the majority of the time our state's been more concerned as the depletion of the herring, for example, and the hooligans as well, the main source of the feeding grounds, not only for the salmon, but for other wildlife as well. I never hear anybody addressing the concerns as to people, folks, the commercial fishermen and the sports as well, as far as quantity is concerned, when the people should be staying focused on quality.
Okay, Byron, we appreciate your comments. We have had several meetings with processors and others and presentations before the board for this committee on efforts to improve that. And so you can call my office and we'll get some of those presentations to you. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Stephen Dorn.
Thank you.
Stephen, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is Stephen Doherty with the Attorney General's office.
Oh, hello. Would you go ahead and did you hear Representative Johansson's question on what the format of the declarations are that have to be made for potential conflicts at the Board of Fisheries?
Yes, I did. And I'm researching one of them right now, but the at each meeting, each board member is required to disclose any interest in the fishery by the member or any member of their family. It's an oral disclosure, but it's all the board meetings are recorded, and those recordings are available to any member of the public. In addition to that, I believe that there is an annual reporting requirement. That's what I'm currently researching, and I can get back to the committee on that issue. But there is either an annual or a time of appointment disclosure. Actually, another attorney is coming in right now and may have that information.
Okay, very good, Stephen. We're not planning on moving this bill out today, so that if you need time to get the a full answer to us, that's fine as well. Did you want to go ahead and respond, or did the other attorney want to respond at this time?
Mr. Chair, the information that I have is that an APOC disclosure is required, as well as the disclosure that is given at each board meeting. And I'm not familiar at this point with what the APOC disclosures are. I would have to research that.
We're familiar with
that.
We are. So appreciate that. Are there Representative Johnson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the statute, and I was looking for it and didn't have time to find it, does it say family or immediate family?
Immediate family, through the chair.
Do you have the definition of that handy, just so it can be on the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's actually in the statute, in the definition section. Immediate family means the spouse of the person, another person cohabitating with the person in a conjugal relationship that is not a legal marriage, a child, including a stepchild and adoptive child of the person, a parent, sibling, grandparent, aunt, or uncle of the person, and a parent or sibling of the parent person's spouse.
Thank you. I just wanted that on the record because we had testimony that, you know, the family tree and all the way up the Yukon, and it really is a fairly limited, I mean, it may be large in some families, but it's not second, third, and fourth generation, nephews, nieces, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you. Aunts and uncles and grandparents, and it can in many areas out in this state where everybody are, you know, local residents that have been there a long time can be can be quite an extensive part of the community, though. Representative Edgman?
Mr. Chairman, to help us in our future discussions, I think I'd like to get more information, and I don't know if this would be through the Department of Law or maybe the Board of Fishery staff itself, but just some, for comparative purposes, some information on the level of disclosure currently in place for the Board of Fishery, as well as the strength of the conflict of interest provisions in a comparative manner. You know, how does that compare to other boards, lay boards in particular? Just some information that gives us a little bit of a benchmark that we can kind of go back to, and I think might help us in terms of understanding what, you know, whether we're breaking new ground here or whether we're in fact going back and you know, taking the Board of Fishery and bringing it to the place where a lot of other lay boards are at present.
Okay, thank you. And Stephen, is that something that we can request of you folks to prepare for us? And of course, we want to concentrate on boards that do pass regulations, not boards that are just advisory.
Mr. Chair, you would have to make that request through the ethics attorney at the Department of Law. I'm not familiar with the operation of other boards besides the Board of Fisheries.
Okay, that's good.
But I would say that the same statute applies to all state boards and commissions.
Thank you. We'll make that request. Are there any other requests or information or questions for the Attorney General? Okay, so we've got work draft C before us, so all the LIOs should have that. If anyone is still looking at draft A, they should call my office or go to the LIO to get a copy of the committee substitute that is before the committee, so that if we have further comments, they'll be on the right one. And Representative Edgman?
Just real quickly here, are we going to hear from the department staff then on this bill, particularly the Board of Fisheries staff?
They didn't sign up. We have somebody from Department of Fisheries, ADF&G here. Are you planning on offering any?
Not today.
Okay, we'll ask them and see whether they have an opinion that they want to offer on this. Sometimes the department and the Board of Fish are on a little different plans for recommending what they want the other one to do. So, but we'll ask that. Is there any other information that anyone wants? If there is, please forward that to me and we'll get that information for the next time we hear this bill. And thanks everyone for participating. And I wanted to announce that on Friday, we will not have a meeting because we will be having a mining tax presentation with in Ways and Means Committee. That's in the Finance Committee, so if anybody's interested in that. So we will not have a meeting on Friday, and we will see you at the next meeting. We'll be adjourned, and it is 10:54.